Support for the homemade broadcast on Sunshine 96.7 FM WMTV comes from Truvy Salon and Spa in St. Petersburg. Located at 8908 4th Street North, Unit B, Truvy Salon and Spa offers hair care products and salon services by appointment only. Find out more about Truvy Salon and Spa at their website, TruvySalonAndSpa.com.
This is a homemade broadcast radio production.
I just wanted to chime in and say that I think you have some great views on everything. And I think you have some great opinions.
Oh, well, thanks.
Including what you're talking about right now. I think you are highly underrated. I think that you're doing a great job.
I agree, Karen. Believe me.
Central Avenue. We're all about the Sunshine City. RadioSaintPete.com.
RadioSaintPete.com presents the Homemade Broadcast.
If you're not a regular to this type of radio, here's a word of caution. You may find it explicit. You decide if Tampa Bay Radio is blaring out airwaves or shockwaves.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CBTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on RadioSaintPete.com. Welcome to the program. My name's Will. Anna Hummel will be joining me momentarily. I'd like to remind you can get in touch with the program via telephone, voice, and text message, 813-693-2124, HMBRadio.com. Will's YouTube.com, where the live stream lives Wednesdays between 4 and 5:30. We go live. Go subscribe there. Click the bell if you want to join in. And some of you do that, and we certainly appreciate. It's good to talk to somebody live. Sometimes we'll have people come in the chat room and in the actual stream, and get to talk with Anna Hummel, and it's a good time. Kind of a depressing episode this week, but I don't know. I don't really know. Just hold on to your butts. That's really all I can tell you. Make sure you follow me on Twitter and Instagram, home_made_man. Radio St. Pete is Radio STPETE on Instagram and Twitter. And we would appreciate that. Without further ado, let's get into the program. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the Homemade Broadcast, episode 454. My name's Will Koontz. That's some stupid cat that Anna has. And hold on, I gotta fade this out. My own producer here, so I gotta do it very carefully. And then I'm gonna introduce Anna Hummel and Small Penis Cat.
Yes, it's Small Penis!
He's so big.
He is very large now. Yeah, last time I saw him... What's that?
Sorry. Oh, I just said Gudu and I are both saying hello. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. That is Anna's roommate's cat, that she has abandoned and now Anna possesses and owns and is raising it. This is going to be the first time after the nuclear war starts where she will eat meat, will be that stupid cat, Gouda.
I'm actually breastfeeding it right now.
Oh, well, that's why it's starving. It looks a little thin. Welcome to the program, folks. My name's Will. This is Anna. This is a program we do once a week live now. If you're listening on a podcast later on, you can join us Wednesdays between 4:30, 5:30, right around there. We like to do this live and interact with you. People who listen to the program, but I get it. Like, I'm a podcast person and I tend to listen to things not live. So, there's many of you that do that too. So thank you for listening later. I've just been having one of those days, Anna. It's been a tough day. I couldn't get my damn camera working. I don't know why, what happened, but I figured it out. Some setting was turned off. I didn't turn off the setting in the app, but I went all around, figured it out, got that back on. Also got some bad news about my employment.
Not your employment, but you've been fired from a job you currently have.
No, I'm not fired from a job that I currently have, but I had a lead on a very cool job that I thought I was a shoo-in for. And, they ended up going another direction, unfortunately. And I didn't even get past the first round of interviews. Yeah. I did the first interview and I kind of almost thought it was a formality. And then I got the, hey, thanks for applying, but, no, thank you. You're not what we want. We don't want you. So that was pretty disappointing. So I've been moping around all day.
Rejection hurts no matter what form it comes in, really. You know,
it does. I think at this age, it's almost, you know, when you're a teenage boy getting rejected by women, and I'm sure it's the same for teenage girls and boys and, you know, whatever your gender, I don't want to leave anybody out, whatever your sexuality preference is, you know, it's tough getting rejected by a sexual partner. But now it's almost at this age, I feel like not getting, like, why don't you want me? I'm so good for this job. How could you not want me? And they still turn me down. Even with all the, I thought my resume is impressive. I think I have a prestige of working on a very successful and really a great radio station where I'm at now with the lineup that it has. It's phenomenal. I mean, you can't deny it. And then still, I mean, I had the freaking star of the show, of the network, the big dog, on his program saying how good I am and that, right, I should have my own show. And I even sent that. I'm such a creep. I went back and somebody told me that this happened. So I went back in the app and found the audio, painstakingly spent so much time finding this audio and grabbed it, 'cause I feel like it's a good thing to put stick in your
resume. Absolutely.
And I even, after the interview, I even sent that clip in and I figured, well, this is going to do it. This is going to do it. And nope, don't want you. Well, so,
you know, at this point, I feel like because almost no one is really working on maintaining a meritocracy, it just seems like it's probably the fact that they were just looking optically for someone that didn't look like you.
I don't blame them. I'm not much to look at. See, that was the thing with radio.
And I don't want to assume that either. And I don't want to just say, oh, you didn't get the job, it's because you're white or some, or male, which may be the case, but it may not be the case. But it just seems like you've been in the business long enough. You are familiar with the market. You have experience. You have people high up on the food chain giving you, singing your praises and giving you accolades. It seems like it's just a perfect fit. And when you told me about this, you know, I was in the car with my boyfriend and I'm like, dude, this is it. This is Will's next move. This is perfect. We were discussing it, you know, yada, yada, yada. So again, I don't want to assume it's because of, you know, how you look or don't look, but it just seems to be odd that you didn't even pass like the first round of interviews.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it sucks. Oh, I didn't think you were talking about my race or my sex organs. What sex organs? I thought you were just saying I was ugly. Which I was like, yeah, I agree with that.
Also, you know, play into it. But I mean, talk radio is kind of for ugly people. You know, that's what, yeah, I mean, we've heard this, you've got a face for radio deal. I mean, it's funny because it's half true. I mean, not for everybody.
Oh, it's my dad's favorite joke. It's my dad's favorite joke for me.
Of course. It's boomer jokes. It's fun. But I say that as I have two of the largest pimples I've ever seen in my life on my face. And then right under that, I have remnants of my black eye, which just now looks like a shadow or a birthmark and just makes me look older and more tired. So, you know, I too am glad that I am on the radio and not on television.
Yeah, but I mean, yes.
Even though there's a visual component.
There's visual components now. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's the bone as bone TV. You got Twitch, you know, where you're at. And it, I mean, you're kind of on camera all the time. I don't think there's an expectation for radio people to be attractive, but it certainly couldn't hurt. I mean, it helps in every other aspect of life that you can imagine. So, I mean, obviously, the better looking you are in any field, it's going to be. But it used to be kind of the place you could go and make a decent living is radio and be ugly. Because nobody had to know what you look like.
Right. But that's really not how things work, as you know, because the people that hire you are probably going to have to be around you and interact with you. So if it's between you and a 25-year-old hot chick with the same resume, and it's between having you in studio every day and having to interact with you versus having her in studio every day and having to interact with her, they're probably going to choose her. So, you know, it's not just for the audience. It's also for the company and the people that work there as well.
Is she as smart and talented as I am? The same?
Yes. Her name is like Wilma. Okay. She's the same person as you.
Okay.
In terms of intellect, in terms of politics, et cetera, all of the same accreditations, all that sort of thing. But the only difference is that she's a hot 25-year-old and you're you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I totally get that. I understand. And I know that the position that I was applying for was currently or is currently held by a female. So I wonder if maybe that has something to do with it, where they're looking for a. I'll be interested to find out who ends up getting that role there at that position.
Spike on the mic.
Maybe. Hey, maybe. That would be something. That would be something. I love Spike.
Will kills himself.
I used to kind of hate Spike, but I really like him now. I get to talk to him a little bit every day. He's a funny guy. He's cool. I had to block him on Twitter though because he was annoying. He took everything like literally on there and would just comment and be like, "What about Donald Trump?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I'm not even talking about that." So I had to let him.
You know, you don't have to answer people on Twitter, right?
Oh, you just block them. That's what I'm saying. You block them and they don't bother you anymore.
Or just like, yeah. But I understand if it's kind of like stuffing up your feed and everything. You just don't want to see it anymore. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. There's a few other listeners that do that too. There's this guy, Gary Breeswine. I don't know if he's still.
Oh, he's all over me too. He calls in almost at least once or twice a week on Bubba Show.
Really? Oh, he doesn't call. I was like, oh, he's a coward. He doesn't call. I've spoken.
He's calling us. He's calling
you. Interesting. Because I've spoken to him on the phone. I remember one time a long time ago, and he was actually kind of cool. He was, you know, he had disagreements, but he was civil. But online, I don't know what it is. It just turns people into monstrous human beings. His thing is he'll say terrible things to you. And then be like, oh, you're very thin skinned. And you'd be like, yeah, well, I'm just, it's not an open door for you to harass me. You can't just come in here. Like a lot of people go, oh, it's social media. That's what it is. And you go, okay, but not every open door is an invitation to enter either, just because it's public. So yeah, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to interact with you. You're a dick. And then you just block them and close the door.
I mean, I'm glad that you had a cordial conversation with him on the phone. It took probably about a year and a half for us to kind of train him to have the proper like greetings and salutations. Cause usually he would just, we'd pick up the phone and he'd just be like, F you, like just go crazy. And we'd have to dump it. And it was just, he would say things. We have a member of the show named Dr. Dan, and him and Dan see eye to eye on nothing. So there was a lot of insult throwing, a lot of dumping that would have to happen. So I'm glad that you've had nice interactions with him over the phone, but he's been a bit challenging for us, although he's very much improving.
That's
so
good.
There's kind of like this script that we have. We're like, hello, you know, did you ever watch Seinfeld where it's like, hello, Jerry.
Yes.
Hello, Newman.
Yes.
Where you have to give the greeting. That's what it's like when Gary calls. We're like, he's like, hi, Bubba. And we're like, hey, Gary.
You know what's weird about him, too, is I was so, because he harasses everybody. Uh-huh. And he's and I dug into him a little bit. And he's an attorney. I believe he lives in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Is he a former attorney? I don't think he's practicing anymore, because I really considered reporting him to the New Mexico bar and be like, look at this guy's tweets. Even though I hate that, and I think that shouldn't be the thing. Also, it's like, you're annoying me and you're my enemy, so I want to crush you now.
According to Gary, it seems that he does this thing where, to give like credit to his points, he'll come from like a place of authority. And so like, he'll just say that he's a lawyer, and then all of a sudden he's a physicist. He's like, well, I'm a physicist.
Oh.
And then he'll just be like, I'm an architect. And I'm like, Are you a biologist too? Like, anytime he wants to make an argument via like about science or about politics or about law, he comes in saying, well, I'm a physicist. Well, I'm a biologist.
And
I'm like, no, you're not, Gary. Because you took one course in college doesn't make you a biologist.
That's fascinating. I didn't. Well, first of all, it's a logical fallacy. It's an appeal to authority fallacy.
Absolutely. But a lot of people fall for that sort of thing. We're like, oh, this guy knows what he's talking about because he's a doctor. He's a lawyer. So he uses that. And here's the thing. You can just lie. We've seen it with our own eyes when people are like, I'm in real estate.
Right.
So he's just like, I'm a biologist. It's like, okay, right, sure, why not?
You had a friend like that. Yeah, I remember very
I did.
Well.
I did, yeah.
David Council said, why don't you just hide the person's tweets? Yes, that is one course of action. Actually, I did that with him, where you don't see the responses. And part of me was like, it's going to bother them more if they send you tweets and then they're just not getting any sort of reply. That's probably going to bug them more.
Isn't that the point?
Yeah. And then there's the, you know, if you block them, then it kind of gives them some satisfaction because they know that, oh, I said something.
That's you.
Yeah, and it bothered me enough to go out of my way. But then you only have to do that once, and they're gone, period. I even had to delete him or ban him from the Johnny B. Show page because it was something about a post about hurricane relief. Like, he's a boomer. He's an idiot. He doesn't know how to use Facebook. And then he's talking about freaking politics. I'm like, dude, and that bugged me because we're trying to raise money for hurricane, you know, people were impacted by Hurricane Ian.
Yeah.
And this jack off is just going on about politics on this post. And it's just like, man, I just can't do this anymore.
I gotta let you go.
Like, if I had my way, I would say, please don't listen to our show anymore. Like, go away. I don't want you as an audience member anymore, which is, you know, we really need all the help we can get, to be frank. But honestly, I would much rather send him packet. And that's kind of the theory behind, you know, instead of hiding their tweets, just blocking them, because they're still around. You know, you want to cultivate a community, I think, David. And you want people who are, you know, I have no problem people disagreeing with something I say, certainly. And you can, you know, do it in a civil manner and comment, and I'll definitely talk back. But if you're just like, you're a effing moron, and just like, okay, well, that's not, you're just a jack off. I would smack you if you were in front of me. But unfortunately, you live in New Mexico and you're 80. So I can't do anything. So I'll just send you on your way. Next time he calls you, make sure you say that I said hi.
I will.
Yeah.
I will.
Yeah. What else did David say? He says, I don't know what's worse. What about us and we're losing, bring politics in every country? Yeah. It's tough.
Both are bad. Both are bad.
Especially on a post about hurricane relief from a hurricane that just devastated the Tampa Bay and I guess more South Florida, but even Tampa Bay was affected by this thing. And I mean, just take a break. Just take one day. Please chill. Just can't bring himself to do it. I did get this message too from Kevin. He says, hey, this is Kevin. I love your show. I'm disabled, and my daughter is disabled. We have nowhere to go, and we have 48 hours to vacate. Please Well, if you can help Kevin, he's got his Cash App right there. If you would like to do that, Kevin, I got to be honest with you. We have 11 listeners though live right now. So I don't know if we're going to be much help. I appreciate you, checking it out and, sharing it. And, I hope your situation improves. And if anyone can help, there's Kevin's, Cash App right there. I wish you luck. And, I hope things get better real soon. Anywho, speaking of the hurricane, have you heard about this phenomenon of line wives and bucket bunnies?
No.
You're not on social media. You're not on TikTok. So no. I'm not on TikTok either. But there is a phenomenon going on right now. Line wives are wives of utility workers who, you know, we had thousands of them come down from all over the place in the country, Indiana, South Carolina, North Carolina. They all came down here to help get Florida reconnected in the aftermath of Ian. And there is, like, I don't know if you've ever been through a power outage from a storm, but I was out for 3 days here at my place. And there was not a finer sight in my mind than when you saw that power truck roll down your neighborhood. It was such a feeling of excitement and gratitude and just like, oh my God, I got to go give this guy a beer. And apparently there's some people called bucket bunnies who, instead of beers, they offer sexual services to these men because they're so happy to see them. I thought it was an absolutely fascinating trend. And apparently there's line wives on TikTok making videos about that and how they deal with, you know, their husbands cheating. A lot of these guys, they get on Tinder, and they make accounts while they're down here and just post pictures of them in the bucket. You know, I'm a utility man. Hey, you know, if you want to show your appreciation for us, I have a few ways. And then they have a point at their crotch emoji. And apparently some ladies out there, you know, bite on this whole thing.
They sure do.
It's fascinating. There's a line wife is the wife. Bucket bunny, according to the Urban Dictionary, is a woman who hops from electrical lineman to lineman looking to have sex, often not caring if the men are single or married. Bucket refers to the lineman's work truck and is a long extended bucket. Ooh. The term appears to be pejorative and often used in conjunction with the phrase line hoe, which I think I like that one better, frankly. And I did see some videos. I think there's cursing in them, though. I don't know if I want to play them. We tried to keep it clean here, PG-13. So I don't think I could play any of these. You've never offered sex for anything, right?
Not that I recall, like an explicit sort of trade of goods and services, or what do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, can you think of a scenario where you would be like, okay, this is going to be something I'm willing to give my butt up for?
No.
You're kind of a classy broad. You have something called morals, which is unfortunate for you.
Morals is the word, because I don't think that people that have casual sex are immoral. I wouldn't say that. I would say that I value myself in a different way than most women in the West, I would say. People, especially women these days, it seems, have more of a cavalier attitude when it comes to sex, and they've tried to treat sex like men often do. Not all, but that, you know, it's just kind of, you can have it, and you can have it, you're unattached, and it doesn't matter. And if you want to, you know, have casual sex like a man, you're more than welcome to do so. I don't think that's good for the female psyche. We're built a little different. And I've always known this, even before I kind of knew the science behind it. I knew that I couldn't really, like, F like a man. I always knew that, because I would hold hands with someone and fall in love with them. As like a teenager or a young person in my 20s, I would hold hands with a man and I'd go, I think I love him now. And I thought, well, if I'm already attached and we're just holding hands, I probably shouldn't bang him. Because in that case, I'm probably going to get really attached. So I kind of always had this idea that I get attached easily when I'm intimate with someone. And I think most women are like that, but they've kind of trained themselves not to be because they've had so many sexual experiences that having sex to them is often just like shaking hands. Whereas with me, I still find it like I hate using this word, but it's somewhat of a sacred thing to me. It's not something that I have had often in my life. And there's been periods of, you know, 3 to 5 years of my adult life where I didn't have sex at all. So I'm kind of a camel in that way, a sex camel, where I can go very long without having water, so to speak. So anyways, that's kind of a long-winded answer, but yeah, no, I'm not a hoe. So
I think, like it's weird because I would probably bang for a turkey sandwich, and that
you're
is
also a guy though.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's kind of imprinted now on most women. I think it's changing now. I think a lot of ladies have figured this out, that it's a scam, you know, to go through this whole thing. And, you know, just you're one of the guys. Like it's nature, if you want to blame that. I know that you don't believe in God, so you wouldn't say God, but a creator. There's just more to risk if you're a gal in the game. Like
there's everything to risk.
Yeah.
Everything. I mean, okay, STDs, fine. Even women are more susceptible to STDs than men are, unless, you know, it's, you know, that door, you know?
Yeah,
but
right.
But still, like, it's the same concept of what is getting penetrated is usually more susceptible to the disease than the other way around, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and not to say that men can't get STDs, obviously they can, but just the anatomy of the way that things fit or whatever, it just, women are more susceptible. So, but beyond that, it's mostly about the reason why women's chastity and virginity have been valued throughout human history is because of the issue of paternity certainty. And the fact that, or not paternity certainty, excuse me, the risk of pregnancy. So if you, you know, get some broad pregnant, it takes you, you could literally contribute a minute. And that's, I guess, is even being generous, 30 seconds. And that's all you could contribute. Where on the other end, the woman would have to go through pregnancy, gestation, lactation, and then obviously be kind of stuck with this kid. So it was very, very important for women human evolution, the women that were involved in hominid evolution, to be very selective with their male partners. They shouldn't be just kind of, you know, whatever and cavalier about who they're having sex with, because they had to be very careful because of the risk of pregnancy. And so people think, oh, men and women equal. But no. Now with the advent of like birth control, contraception and stuff like that, you know, women are like, well, I don't really have a risk if I don't want, or I could have an abortion or whatever. But the biological and psychological mechanisms didn't just dissipate in the 60s because abortion became available, or because contraception became available. It didn't change what's up here. But people are trying to force that into you socially by being like, yeah, no, you can bang like a dude. No, you can't. I've yet to meet one woman who can have completely unattached sex. The only people that can do that are prostitutes.
And I don't even know if they can either. Or I think a lot of people just lie to themselves.
Well, I think that they can because in their mind, it's a business. And they have to do it every night. So it's not like you can fall in love with a man every time you have sex with him, right? But for most women, and at least those women are getting paid for it. You think about all the women who are giving it up for free and they're not even getting paid for it. Those are just sluts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like at least a hoe, a prostitute is getting money, but a slut is just someone who's giving up for free and not really getting anything from it. So just funny.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. It's definitely not the same. It's kind of a burden to ladies to have to deal with this. I feel bad for you to a certain extent, but I guess you just gotta know your worth.
Yeah, I think it's important to be selective, and I think that at least in my experience, I've had a few partners in my past where it was kind of annoying how much I would push back or require, you know, STD screenings or whatever, like made them jump through a lot of hoops, and it was really annoying for them because they're like, I have to schedule this, I have to go to the doctor, I have to do this. But every single one of them, and I'm only really referencing two, but those two made it a point to tell me after everything was said and done, I'm so glad that you made me go through that, because I know and feel secure that you're not just going to go to the club one night and hook up with a random guy because you're too scared of STDs and, you know, intimacy.
Because you're mentally ill.
Huh?
Because you're mentally ill.
Right, exactly. So they felt very comfortable knowing that they had to go through a lot of hoops, and that is required of any man that, you know, is trying to get intimate. So they felt a lot more comfortable. They trusted me more, if that made sense.
Sure. So. Yeah, absolutely. That's it's in the short term, I think guys are like, oh my God. But in the long term, I think, yeah, you feel you have that sense of security that, you know, you're not just going to go out and find another partner for sure.
Right.
So no giving it up for electricity. You're not going to become a bucket bunny.
No. You know, I would give it like a hey, thanks. Thanks, guy. You guys
all right. You're offering off? Hand stuff instead. That's pretty good. I feel like that's
a, maybe a high five or a wave. I was trying to do a wave. Like, hey,
I see.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Careful. Somebody's going to clip that and send it and claim that you're a Jewish Nazi. Don't do that too far. Extend that arm. Nope. Don't do it. I'm telling you.
Calm down.
For your own sake, please don't do it. You know, one thing I wanted to touch on with you too is, did you hear about this woman who survived the ISIS bombing? I believe she was Nordic or something, Northern European. Yeah. She got euthanized. She was 23 years old. She tried to kill herself twice in 2018, 2020. She posted regularly on social media about her struggles since the ISIS bombing there at the airport. Took a bunch of medications. 23 years old, chose to be euthanized earlier this year in Belgium. Belgium, yeah.
She was a victim of a bombing that didn't kill her.
Correct.
And the trauma sent her down a spiral of depression where she wanted to take her life and attempted a few times.
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct. And in Belgium, a Northern European, and she's a Northern European lady, they said, okay. And they let her do this. She was surrounded by her family. They hooked her up to the rig. I'm assuming it was some sort of injection. And her mother held her hand and let her go. And she died because she's mentally ill from this thing. And I, you know, part of me on the surface, you go, well, my thing is your body is kind of the only thing that you do own in this world, and if you really don't want to be here, then you shouldn't have to be. But also, it left me feeling a little sick to my stomach thinking about this, how they just went okay and kind of threw her away, almost validating her not wanting to be here when it's really kind of cool and special that you're here. What a miracle it is that one of your dad's cells went into your mom. And then they collided out of the millions or hundreds of millions of other people that you could have been. This was the one that made it. And how uncertain and just crazy numbers it is that you're here. And then they just throw it away like that. And I know that she obviously had probably some survivor's guilt there, was traumatized or whatever. And I guess they put her through the rigmaroles of the therapy and whatever, but then she just said, no, I'm just going to give up. And they just gave up on her and let her just drift off. Yeah. 23.
In principle, I think that it's fine. In principle.
And superficially anyways. Yeah. I go, okay, well, that's your decision, but
you're an adult.
Doesn't sit right.
Want it. You tried to get help. You don't want to be here. You should be able to opt out, you know?
Yeah. But you know, you're an adult. 23 is an adult legally. But I remember, you know, 23 wasn't that long ago for me. And I don't think that I was fully mature at 23 to make that sort of decision.
No,
it just seems dark. It doesn't sit right with me. It's been bothering me all week, actually, thinking about this story.
The line in the sand is 18. You know, I don't think any human being, male or female, has a fully developed brain at 18. But we have to draw the line in the sand where if you can be sent to war, you should be able to be considered an adult, tried as an adult, treated like an adult. I think you should be able to drink at 18. Like, I think everything, it should be just 18. We decided that's when you're a grown human, even though many people know that you're not mentally. But at the end of the day, legally and principally, if you want to opt out, you should be able to.
Yeah.
Probably not a popular opinion.
Well, I think it is, because even saying that, you know, I agree with you, but also I think it's something severely wrong with that. And I don't know. And it kind of goes back to just these fights that are happening on the culture front with now kids and teenagers getting surgeries, you know, cutting off body parts and something. I'm not particularly religious or anything, but it almost seems like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem right. You know, it makes me feel like society is just kind of crumbling. And we don't even have any sort of semblance of right and wrong anymore, of any sort of morality of, I don't know, but that's even worse. I mean, that's the ultimate, just letting somebody go who's mentally ill, who's probably, you know, who probably can't make these judgments because they're mentally ill, and just saying, okay, yeah, and just giving up on them.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with this guy named David Benatar, but he's a antinatalist, and he has a very interesting argument about how he wrote a book called Better Never to Have Been. And essentially he was making the argument that it's immoral to have children, which is pretty scandalous. It's a pretty provocative argument to make. I heard him speak when I was in grad school. He came to a conference and he gave about an hour talk, and everyone was just like, because it was one of those things where he was kind of like the Andrew Tate of philosophy, where he's saying a lot of things and he's aggravating a lot of people, but everything he's saying is pretty much true, you know? And he makes the argument essentially that even the best lives that on the planet go through an immense amount of pain and suffering. Even the best lives, even people who have lives like you and I, who don't live in Yemen, who don't live in Syria, who don't live in Ukraine, we suffer tremendously. And he was saying, if you can eliminate that suffering, eliminating suffering is a good thing. He said, now people always bring up the point of, you know, well, what about all the great things, all the joy that life brings? He goes, well, if you take away joy, that's just a neutral thing. But if you can eliminate suffering, that's a good thing. Like, that's a positive. So his whole thing was that you shouldn't procreate. We should just kind of hold hands and walk into extinction together. Which is a pretty provocative argument, but it was very interesting. And kind of along that same line, there are some people that are cursed with broken brains, especially people. I think the people I feel like the most sorry for, I guess, in terms of just like mental illness, are people that have schizophrenia, because they're hearing voices that aren't there. You know, people are telling them to do things, or just constant chatter of just like demonic things, or just like paranoia, or they think they're being followed. And really the only sort of medication for these people is just to numb them, right? And they feel nothing. So when I think about like that life, is that life worth living, where I'm either extremely paranoid or I feel nothing at all? Like, I wouldn't want to go through life that way. So I can kind of understand where mental illness gets to a point where it's so debilitating that, you know, maybe we should be listening to the person who's like, listen, I'm telling you, this life sucks. I want to opt out. I don't want to be here anymore. You know, yeah. And I think that most people aren't like that. I think most people have the ability for at least some measure of rehabilitation, where it's like better lifestyle, better environment, the right medication. But maybe, just maybe, there is a certain subset of people who just, they're having a horrible time every moment of every day. And the only relief that they get is when they're just like not conscious, you know. So there is an argument to make that maybe that's the best. And that's literally what euthanasia means, is better off dead. Like, I think that's the Latin translation. So it's sad because of her age. But if she had polio and she was like 85, with rheumatoid arthritis and pancreatic cancer, everyone would be like, oh yeah, hospice, no problem. She lives a horribly miserable life where she's suffering every day. Well, maybe she is. Maybe she is, but she happens to be 23. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. You know, there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration.
Yeah. There is a currency of victimhood. That's a word that gets thrown around a lot and often mocked, but I think it's very true. And there's the weakness is celebrated and like, well, she did all she could and we're just going to let her die. Now she wants to die, so we're going to let her die. And I think it's different for like if you have some sort of disease, physical disease, a cancer that's painful or something like that. Like I go, okay, well, you should be able to choose kind of how this ends because it is ending. I mean, you know for sure that it's ending. And just at 23 years old, there's just such a, man, you get such a long time, but also such a short time too. I mean, in the long run, I've been, you know, depressed throughout my life too. It's something that runs clinically in my family, you know, anxiety disorders, that whole thing. I've been diagnosed when I was a kid with these things. And I feel like I kind of was able to overcome them, not through the care of a professional. I guess I'm lucky in that sense that I just kind of got my life together to a certain degree. There's other aspects where it's not going so great, but in some aspects I've got my life together and you know, you get sad sometimes. The thing that for me that really helped the realization that I came to of when I'm sad and, you know, you don't want to be alive anymore or something is it's only what 80 something years. I mean, like maybe 100 years max for people for the human lifespan now. And it's not really that long. Like I can grit through even if I'm sad this amount of time just because it's so short. You don't know what's on the other side and you're going to find out eventually. But why rush that end? You know, so you wake up the next day and something tremendous could happen and also something really bad. But that's kind of life, living that up and ups and downs. And I can grit through another 50 years or whatever it is if I have 50 years left, whatever. But it's just so sad to see, you know, and obviously I haven't gone through an ISIS bombing. That's thankfully not yet anyway, and hopefully never. But I don't know. It made me so sad for this girl and just her family. Like I saw David, you know, he said that as a father, he could never give up on his daughter. I don't have kids or anything, but man, I would imagine it would be the same thing. And how easy they just kind of, okay, and just kind of tossed her away. You want to do this? I understand. And just let her go and held her hand. It was just so dark. And it made me feel icky.
Yeah, it's an odd way of like being progressive. Like, yeah. Is that the next frontier where we're just like, oh, you want to die? Maybe that's your orientation. Is you're a life person or a death person? So you could just die, you know? So, and again, they, like in Northern Europe and Scandinavia, not that Belgium is part of Scandinavia, but whatever. It's very liberal society. It's a very secular society. And I think that they, and again, I don't know for sure, but I would probably say, you know, maybe they just kind of look at death as like the next step of life. You know, maybe they don't look at it as like this final end. It's just kind of like the natural progression of things. And maybe this person just, I didn't read the article, so I don't know if they really tried everything and she was hurting herself all the time. You know, I don't know. But I would venture to say that, you know, they have probably a different outlook when it comes to mental illness and euthanasia. But here's the thing, like, euthanasia, I think, definitely has a place in society. You know, I think it's almost cruel when people want to die. There was some, like, not a rock star, but he was like a, like, Studio 54 guy. This was like 5 months ago where he actually went to, I think it was either Switzerland or maybe it was Belgium, Denmark, something like that. And he died over there because they were able to kind of give him what they did with this other lady, but he was in his 80s, you know? So, and he went and he had assisted suicide. So I think there's definitely a place for that in society. It's just what's unfortunate about this is her age. She's 20. She was 23.
Right. Yeah. And it's not a, it's not a physical disability either. It's something in your brain. I just feel like, man, there's got to be.
Your brain is part of your body.
Yeah.
You know, it's kill you like the same way that most diseases do. No. But could it be just as insufferable? Yeah. Like, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I mean, it's not something that's like brain cancer or something that's going to, like, you have 6 months to live.
Right.
And it's going to be extremely painful in the last, you know, few weeks. And you go, okay, well, I'd rather not suffer through that pain. Like, I totally get that. That makes total sense. Even if she was that age. But I don't know. It just seems like, well, you don't know what tomorrow is going to be like. Maybe they'll find some new medication. Maybe they'll find some new treatment. Maybe she'll just, you know, the body and the brain can heal itself to a certain degree with some of these things. Maybe she would just snap out of it one day.
Yeah.
And she just gave up at 23. And it made me just feel gross hearing this story.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad for her, and just kind of, it's really kind of sums up for me where humanity is going. Like, we're just giving up. And we have a lot to offer. Like, humanity really is awesome. It's got a lot of bad in it, clearly. But humanity is capable of doing really cool things. And humanity's problems, a lot of the things that are going on in the world are caused by humanity, but the only ones that can fix them is humanity, and people are working on it. And I was just so sad hearing this story. It really bummed me out. And like I said, I'm with you. Like, superficially, it seems like, well, that's her choice. That's what she wants to do. But can you be physically, is she capable of making that decision? And if she's mentally ill, the answer I think is no. And, you know, again, just the parents just being like, yeah, well, we're just going to give up. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just repeating myself. That that a physician would take on that case, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I understand a Dr. Kevorkian type where, like I said, they have terminal illness, they're old, they're in pain every day, it's not getting better. It's just a few months between them and death, whatever. So it is kind of unusual that, you know, someone who had I don't know if it was a state run thing. I don't think that it was. It sounds like it was like a private enterprise. It was like, yeah, come to this really nice facility. There's a spa, have a nice last meal, friggin' drink this cyanide, go to sleep, don't wake up, sort of a deal.
It's dark, man. It's really
dark, but it's kind of, it's disturbing, even though I believe in it in principle of like what you should be able to do whatever you want. If I was a physician that was involved in assisted suicide, I don't think that I would be able to take on a case like that and sleep well at night. So there's also that, like, it feels wrong, but on paper it's like, yeah, I mean, she should be able to do whatever.
Empathy and sympathy for people is causing humanity to do some really ghoulish, demonic things. And, you know, it goes back to even these treatments of removing body parts and messing with chemicals, you know, when they're before puberty, and then even going, yeah, you can just die if you want. I don't know. And because they're tormented and this is the only way. It's gender affirming care and then life or death affirming care. You know, you could just go down this rat, and it keeps, the slippery slope seems to just keep going and keep going. And I think any normal observer, even if you support these things, there's got to be a point where you step back and be like, wait a minute, is everything okay? I don't know. And I think a lot of people just go, I just go and push a button for D or R. That's all I can do. And I totally get that. But man, it just seems like we are slipping into the darkness, and it just keeps going, and it seems to be accelerating faster and faster. And I almost wonder if, a nuclear war is what we need at this point to kind of reset things.
Well, it sounds like we're right on the edge of World War III. So
we got, the president purchased $400 million worth of radiation pills. There's a lot of construction going
but
on.
But not related to the conflict that's going on. It's just, you know, just to have in case we need it.
Yeah. It's, there's those bunkers too, where Congress goes, and they're working on those at a drastic rate right now too. I don't know. It's not good.
Yeah, those are the people that are making the decisions to possibly get us involved in a nuclear war are the ones that have protection. So it's a little it's a little unnerving that those are the people that are making the decisions that could possibly bring us into war. And those are the people with the resources that have the underground bunkers. You and I don't.
Yeah.
We don't have underground bunkers.
You know, we're in Tampa Bay, and CENTCOM for the whole war machine is right here at MacDill Air Force Base. So I think at least we would probably be the first to go, which might be a blessing. But yeah, it's dark, man. I'm really concerned about what the next few years is going to bring. But I guess that's always the case. There's somebody walking around with the end is near sign. It's always been. So I don't know. But it's hard to stay positive right now. With the news has just been killing me lately. So I don't know. It's pretty dark. David said that it was actually the owner of Studio 54 that did the euthanasia thing.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah.
And, Mike from St. Pete says that, he's right down the middle. I'm with Will. How terribly sad, it's no offer, no other options to a 23-year-old, but I'm also with Anna, where sometimes your mind has madness and you can't bear to live. So boy, what a depressing program this was all around. I'm so happy I was able to bum everybody out today with my own personal gripes and then talk about a woman who killed herself at 23. Wow. 813-693-2124. I guess with that, we'll say goodbye. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned. Frank vs. Jazz Show was up next, followed by the Indie Circuit. If you're listening on podcast, thank you so much. Please share it with a friend. Give it 5 stars wherever you're listening to that. And follow me on social, home_made_man, Instagram and Twitter, and HMB Radio, all one word, on Facebook. My name is Will Koontz for Anna Hummel. I hope you have a chipper week. We're going to put good vibes out in the universe. Everything's going to be fine, folks. Can't wait to talk to you next week. Right here, same time, same channel. Goodbye.
You have found the Homemade Broadcast on RadioSaintPete.com.